Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Twitter and the Monkey Man were hot up for cash. They stayed up all night selling cocaine and hash to an undercover cop who had a sister named Man.
This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
And find out the hard way, nobody gives a damn.
You know, Dave was talking about watching the American crime story, the impeachment version last night on FX. Did he tell you what happened right after he watched the darn thing, Sue?
Yeah, he did.
This was freaky.
All right, you didn't tell me this. I think this is kind of strange.
This was as we were wrapping up the conversation. I looked down at my phone that I had in the studio. And I'm getting a call. I'm sure it's a spam call, but I see the location. It says Little Rock, Arkansas.
That's right.
That's weird.
Well, he wants your opinion on right. what you thought.
Yeah. Or it was Paula Jones because you thought she was just a little
a
redneck
bumpkin.
Out there. Right, a little country bumpkin, if you will. Well, last night in this segment, I had Dr. Nathan Hovind on, who is the superintendent of Francis Howell. And I don't know that he'll be inviting me to Thanksgiving dinner, but I wanted to get some reaction tonight from Francis Howell families and the group that sort of dialed me into some of the things that are happening in that school district. And let's be honest. These are things that are happening in school districts across the country. Chris Brooks is with me this afternoon. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing wonderful and excited to be here, Doc.
Well, and we got a little bit, it sounds like we had a little bit of a rough cell signal, so hopefully that's going to work itself out. But I was thinking about that interview yesterday and some of the answers and some of the material I've seen from Francis Howell, and maybe sometimes I or other people overcomplicate this, because one of the questions I think I would ask Dr. Hovind if I had to go back is there now some sort of requirement, because it seems like there is, to only teach history and in history about African-Americans in particular, I guess, racism in this country, framed around whether or not you can confront your whiteness, because that's essentially a component of all of this.
Absolutely. And you know, in the training video that Dr. King did with the district's teachers, he touched on that, right? But he's spoken a lot more clearly on it in some of the articles he's written. I've read everything that's out there that he's published. And I wanted, you know, just to start, I wanted to mention kind of this model that he uses, right? So a lot of the history curriculums, this is the latest fad, is to do this, what they call an inquiry design model, where they don't have a timeline organized history class, but instead they do what they call big questions, and they organize their units about it. And Dr. King, and this is one of the reasons that we care so much about his video training the teachers.
Let me take a step back here just for a second so people aren't lost, Chris, because Dr. King is LeGarrette King, who was brought in and hired as a consultant for the school district to do their curriculum. I just want to make sure people understand who he is. And he's essentially someone who's pushing CRT pretty hard.
Right. And the district paid him $15,000 for this, and he's also advising other districts in the state and other states as well. And he is a believer, okay, and he's written this many times, that teaching is a political act. Okay, so he does not believe a teacher could be neutral. And he believes that instead teachers need to condition their students to do social justice activism. And one of the ways in which he teaches how to do this is through this inquiry design model, and he wants to make it critical. Now, this is not critical thinking. He says in his paper, he's not talking about critical thinking. He's talking about critical theory, as in critical race theory. And what his model does is they ask a compelling question that critiques what he calls a system of oppression and power. They expose students to sources, including the perspective of these oppressed groups. And then they develop tasks and what he calls a taking informed action activity that has the students go out and do something about it. So this is not education in the sense of transferring knowledge, practicing things. This is education in the sense of inculcating a certain worldview and getting the students to go out there and act on it. And this is what we're concerned about.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, hang on, because you're on the cusp of a phone line here that's not very good. I'm gonna have Dave hang up on you and maybe just try to call you back so we can get a better phone line. So hang on. I think Dave's going to hang up on you. Do you see him out there, Sue? Does he hear me talking about this?
Yep, he's on it. He just gave me the thumbs
right,
up.
Right, so we'll, because...
This is great information.
I actually leaned over to Sue with my mic down and said, should we get a better phone line or not? And you said it was on the cusp, and it kind of was right there. Sometimes he's sounding better, but it is great information, and it's important, which is why I want people to hear it. So let's just see if we can have a slight delay here. Chris is with
happens.
The... I know, me too. And you know what's funny about it is... It used to be where we would prefer a landline over a cell phone. Now the landlines are worse than the cell phones. And I don't know if it's because a lot of them are with Wi-Fi.
Oh, that never occurred to me.
Ask Fred, because Fred will tell you this just based on, you know, he sets up a ton of interviews.
How about old Fred Mottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
And sometimes we just get some of the landlines.
I had no idea. I don't think I'd spoken on a landline in so long.
Well, most people don't even have them anymore. So we'll
wow.
see. All right, I think we got Chris
except
back.
For Mike Miller.
Maybe we'll get... That's because that's all he has.
Hello,
oh, no,
man.
I got to... I this may come up tomorrow because there is... there's a theme, a story. I think it's a book along those lines where somebody dropped out. I just got this pitch today, and it's a guy that doesn't have a cell phone, but his wife has a cell phone, so we might interview him through his wife's cell phone.
That's funny. I'm sure that doesn't drive her nuts.
Chris, are you there?
Yeah, is this any better?
I don't think so.
No.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
I don't think
man.
So.
Well,
are you on speaker or just through your phone?
No, I got the phone here.
Put it on speaker. Let's see if that makes it sound just a little better. Sometimes, believe it
really?
Or not, that way. Yeah, believe
all
it
right.
or not. I tell Fred to put it on speaker all the time because he picks up and goes, I'm like, Fred, I can't hear you. I think he doesn't,
Fred.
I don't think he believes me that I can. And then he puts it on speaker.
All right.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Mark
Reardon, you're
sounds
a genius.
100% better. Thank you, Chris, for doing that. I don't know why that worked. All right, so kind of circling back on what you were saying, and I think we heard the gist of that because they are pushing. They want these students to be involved in social activities, which, by the way, I don't know that there would be anything wrong with that outside of the regular school day, but a lot of this curriculum is built into what these kids are learning on a daily basis, right?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, this is sort of a tangent, right? But one of the things the district did last year is in one of the middle schools, they held mandatory social justice lessons for their students in their homeroom classes, okay, with topics like equity and equality, unconscious bias, race and privilege, privilege and oppression, et cetera. And then at the end of this, okay, they asked them a survey, and it said, what social justice topics would you like to learn more about? And they gave a list like the truth about American history and equity and privilege and how to become an advocate. And then they asked, would you like to participate in a committee to carry out activities on campus for this? This would be during the school day. Okay. And so while we're mostly focused on this particular curriculum, we have to understand that these concepts and this idea of getting the students to become little activists is not limited to one or two courses.
Well, Dr. Hovind seemed to indicate, though, and I know that you guys have heard this in the Francis Howell families, that this is just simply something the students were asking for. So we gave it to them.
Yeah, and if they ask to eat junk food and watch TV all day long, it'll be...
Right.
You know,
I tried to make that point, too. it didn't seem to matter to him. But right, they're demanding... I mean, it's interesting that high school students, I don't know, junior high students, are demanding certain curriculum. I don't remember ever being able to do that, but times have changed quite a bit, haven't they?
Well, but you know what? The students may want this class, and I'll tell you what, everyone in the Francis Howell Families Group wants to teach more history. We want to teach Black history, Black literature, all these additional curriculums, but we don't want what's in this thing they're feeding us, right? Because they went out and they got instruction on how to do this particular type of course, and they went and they implemented it. And Dr. Hovind says, well, just go out and read the curriculum for yourself. And that's what we've been trying to tell them, right? Every one of us in this group first read the curriculum and then came to them. I've been, for the last 6 years or so, I've been a parent volunteer on the district's curriculum committee. So I saw this before anyone else.
Okay.
And I've spent the last, I feel like 6 to 8 months, emailing, meeting with, discussing, giving board meeting speeches about this topic and how there's all this unnecessary social justice, critical theory inspired stuff in. For example, okay, one of the units in the history course has the big question of what historical and modern day struggles exist for Black people in working toward equity. Okay. And what they want students to understand out of this supposedly optional unit is
Black people were limited, resisted, and succeeded in combating systems of oppression, and institutions and policies in society are inherently inequitable and culturally biased. Now, you tell me where this fits into a history curriculum.
Well, it doesn't. It simply doesn't.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's a rhetorical question. It's not that hard to figure that one out. It does not belong. And any kind of effort to justify it is, I don't even know what you would call that, like educational malpractice.
Yeah, and I've been using the same term with our stuff here. And so what we did is I met with the curriculum lead, the content lead, the curriculum director, and I sat down and I gave them point by point, 120 pages, Black history and Black literature, where the problematic stuff was. And they ignored it. Okay, so I said, okay, fine. I went out online and I found a Park Hill School District in Missouri has a Black history course. I went and found that. This is great. It doesn't have the terms. It doesn't have the social justice activism. It is timeline organized. It is comprehensive. It goes through like 7 or 8 different units that all have very clear, well-written topics that ignore the politics. I presented them with that. Crickets.
Yeah, what's so wrong with that? What's wrong with that approach? But you know the answer. There's crickets, Chris, because, and I don't think that Dr. Hovind wants to be honest with this, but this is an effort. You have to be. It's not good enough to learn history. That is not acceptable anymore. If you are white in particular, you have to accept responsibility that you're an oppressor, that you're part of the problem simply because of the color of your skin, and you have to be anti-racist. That is the only path that you can acceptably choose right now, according to many of these educators. Because it's not enough to simply learn about the history and reflect on the history and say, wow, maybe we shouldn't have done this. We can look for different solutions in the future. You have to be an activist.
Exactly. And that's what every line of this is geared towards, right? And they go through this. And for example, in the literature course, you know, you mentioned some of the technical terms yesterday, right? In the literature course, they also have a terms activity. And those, is this related to literature? They learn the definitions of the terms identity, white privilege, microaggression, intent versus impact, civil liberty, white flight, equality, equity, injustice, gentrification, racism, colorism, anti-bias, diversity, discrimination, privilege. You know, it goes on and on. And when they first started writing the history curriculum, the content, so we did sunshine requests to get the documents
right.
They looked at, the emails they sent, the people they talked to. They talked to Dr. King, paid him money, spent at least 9 meetings with him discussing the content of the course.
Do we know how much they did pay him? Do you have the figure for that?
Yeah, it was $15,000.
Okay.
Originally, they wanted to offer about $12,000. I guess he negotiated well and got a little bump up there.
Can't hold that against him. A guy that doesn't like capitalism loves capitalism. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah, and so they met with him, and they reached out to a couple other people in the St. Louis area, including a former member of the Rockwood academic team and a local professor who states in her bio that she's the critical race theorist. Okay, and they took all of this and they put it in the curriculum, and then they said, well, that's not really what it is, right?
Yeah, that's what they keep saying. There's nothing to see here, right, essentially.
They put at the very beginning, the very first thing, the standards that they based this curriculum on, one of those standards they chose to use was the Southern Poverty Law Center's social justice standards. Okay, one of those standards, for example, right, students will recognize the power and privileged influence relationships on interpersonal, intergroup, and institutional levels and consider how they have been affected by those dynamics.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I don't even know. And by the way, the Southern Poverty Law Center is the same group that thinks that people holding the OK sign is white supremacy. So they're disqualified from the very beginning, which
right.
You should tell. I should have told Dr. Hovind that. I mean, that organization is a joke.
Yeah. And they know this, right? If you watch the full video, the full King video that's out there, and you look at some of it, he said as part of it that, you know, schools ask me for curriculum, and I'm not going to give them a curriculum because you're not ready to teach it. Okay, so he knows that what he is doing is teaching teachers the lens to use to view history, and is through this race, oppression, colonization, privilege lens. And then he knows the teachers will go out and develop their own curriculum. And so when we look at this and we see this, and it's so obvious here, and then the district comes out and they says, well, you're just not reading the curriculum. you're not reading the resources.
Well, not only that, but on Dr. King in particular, when I asked Dr. Hovind about that, he just plays that off as, well, you know, he was just offering his perspective and we were listening, not that we took all of his advice or implemented it, which they did, of course. But it was almost, again, like, you know, that's not really a big deal that this guy who hates capitalism and pushes CRT is consulting our school district and we're paying him $15,000 to develop or to help develop the curriculum.
Right. And then at the end of the video, when he's doing a Q&A session with the teachers and he talks about this, and the teachers say, you know, we're in Trump country here. This isn't going to go over well. And he says, well, just use different verbiage, you know, kind of get the point across without using the same words. And well, maybe they didn't take that one to heart because the words are in the curriculum documents and, you know, hundreds of times repeated over and over again.
Chris, wouldn't you have to say, though, I just want to ask this question in fairness, because there are a lot of people. I saw the teachers that got up in May at the meeting. There are a lot of people that buy into this and are pushing this and they want this.
Well, I'm not sure what they want. So if they want a complete history, and I felt bad for those individuals that got up in the meetings and spoke and said they didn't learn this stuff in history. I learned it in history. Maybe the 90s were, you know, a bit different. But this means we need to reexamine our regular history curriculum.
Well, you're right, because I heard some people talking about things that they didn't learn, that then they just had bad schools and bad teachers, because those were, I can't remember the specific topics, but there were things that definitely would have been covered. Now, I've admitted I didn't know much about the Tulsa Race Massacre. Then again, I might have learned about some of this stuff when I was younger and completely forgot about it. And there's no way to jam-pack all of this history, whether it's white history or black history or anything else, into high school curriculum. It's just not going to happen. That's why we go to college and we take advanced history courses and things like that.
Right, and that's why we're lifelong learners, and we keep reading, and we keep studying, and we have podcasts, right, and radio shows that teach us some of these things. And it's absolutely true. You know, even in your regular white history, you're still not learning everything. I mean, I don't see a lot of my ancestors in my history class. Now, we have to understand that there is some value, you know, like anything, CRT is based on some valid ideas. The problem is where they go with it. And the fact that they use this Marxist view of nitpicking at every little problem, blowing it up into a mountain, and then not letting you see the rest of the story. And this is the biggest thing we have with it. When I look through every unit in this curriculum, okay, with the history curriculum, everything in there is on protests. It's on modern headlines. It's on activism. I mean, you look at this, the very first activity in the required unit is free writing on a football player kneeling during the national anthem. Okay. The third one is one of Dr. King's articles on how to do this black history stuff. And you keep going, protests being patriotic, being an activist in your community, the Supreme Court and civil liberties, the concept of World War II and protesting. So it may well be that when these courses are taught, okay, that they are perfectly fine, perfectly normal. But we don't get that when we read the curriculum. And this is what we're telling the district. We want our PAC, our group, has been formed because we believe that it is important to have academic excellence and strong knowledge-based curriculums and teaching in the district. And CRT is the issue of the moment, but we feel it's very, very important that the district focus on teaching good quality knowledge-based stuff, because like you said, you can't teach everything. And every time you add some of this activism, some of the social justice stuff in, something else has to be left out. And that's what's not being talked about, what's being left out. The students that are taking these courses, they could be learning significantly useful life skills. They could be taking a STEM class. They could be taking another science class. They could be actually learning how to do some sort of business writing or go on an apprenticeship, right? But instead, they're going to be getting a course in grievance studies that is not going to prepare them for life, that's not going to teach them a real version of history. It'll be a revisionist, very carefully curated and selected version of history.
So, Chris, I'm gonna say something to you, and I mean it sincerely, because I've interviewed so many different people on these issues in the last year and a half, 2 years. And, Chris Brooks, you're one of the most well-spoken, and you break this down so effectively. And I think this is important for a variety of reasons, because when people like me discuss this, or people here, and I have to take a step back sometimes, because like I'll talk to neighbors in my neighborhood, they don't know anything about this because they listen to sports radio or whatever. I understand. I think people are busy, but we need good people to explain the complexities of this issue. And you and your group are doing a fantastic job. And honestly, if there's other groups out there listening and want to do something along these lines, they should, you know, look at what you're doing as a model, because you're researching, You're doing the homework. You're doing the Sunshine Records request, and you're not getting crazy. And I think the not getting crazy part is important because that gives the other side an opportunity to paint you as something that, you know, you might not be.
Well, that's the goal. And, you know, it's hard because CRT can be a very complex issue, and I know people like to define it in a complex way so that they can avoid talking about it. We're breaking it down to the basics here, and we really want to help people understand that this is not American history. This is not teaching and education and knowledge. This is inculcating in a very specific way an ideology that has been developed for the past 40 or 50 years by academics, and now it's in the wild. Yeah. And this does not lead to a stable society. This leads to constant unrest, constant complaining, no solutions whatsoever. And so we hope that we, you know, through what we're going to try to do, that, you know, the school board doesn't understand it. We've been trying to explain it to them as well. And that's one reason we're around now, is because we got to educate the school board or find new school board members to replace them. So FrancisHealthFamilies.org is our website. We'll be out there. Hopefully people can sign up and track the progress. If you're in the district, if you want to run or if you just want to help out, come on and see us.
Chris, you're doing great work. Really, really great. I appreciate it. I'm glad we got the phone line settled, too, because it sounded a lot better. Chris Brooks, we'll have you back again. Appreciate it.
All right. Good talking to you. Yep, have a great day.
Take care. State Rep. Shamed Dogan. He's running for the Republican nomination to replace Sam Page. Somebody's got to do it.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Tell me, did you think it'd be all right if I could just crash here tonight?
Well, I got to follow back here because Shamed Dogan for STL County, just followed on Twitter momentarily. And I think that's because we have Shamed Dogan, state rep, on the line with us this afternoon. Big announcement today that he's going to seek the Republican nomination to run for St. Louis County Executive. Shamed, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad that you got in this race because someone has got to take a stand, and I think you're a good choice here because you're not I don't want to pigeonhole you, so let me just ask the question this way. How do you define yourself politically?
Well, I am an independent-minded conservative Republican. I am someone who believes in smaller, more efficient government. But I think government does have a role to play in our lives and make it a little bit better. And we need leadership, especially here in St. Louis County, to make that happen and to help turn our county around.
I describe myself as a libertarian conservative, and I see those streaks in you. Obviously, we've agreed on several issues over the years, including some of the marijuana issues, and I think you're on the right track for even some of the police reforms because you were behind the bill that banned chokeholds. So there are rooms for agreement with conservatives and Republicans on some of these matters, which I think you've been pretty instrumental in pointing out.
That's right. I've chaired the Criminal Justice Committee in the House, and we've passed legislation that over the past few years has decreased our prison population because we had too many people who were going to prison over either nonviolent offenses or over technical violations. And prison cells should be reserved for the worst of the worst violent criminals.
So why do you think, because obviously St. Louis County has become a Democratic county, we've had a couple of Republicans that have come relatively close. Bill Corrigan comes to mind, but it seems like a Republican in this race for St. Louis County Executive can never really get it done, mainly because of the numbers in North County. However, as the only African-American member of the legislature as a Republican, I'm guessing there's an opportunity for you there.
Yeah, and I was born and raised in North County, very importantly. Yeah. I grew up in North Woods, and, you know, I still have family who live there, so I have a personal stake in making sure that, you know, North County is paid attention to just like all the other parts of the county. And I was the vice chair of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus, and so I have a tremendous amount of respect for my colleagues, and I've done plenty of things in the legislature to help people throughout our county and throughout our state. And I'm going to be able to take that message to North County, to South County, to West County, to Mid County, and tell folks what I've done and what I plan to do as county exec.
So the last year has been fascinating for me as someone who, you know, really loves politics as an observer and as a talk show host, to watch some of the organic things that have happened with parents. And some of this has been, I think, driven by Sam Page and some of the restrictions from COVID, because parents who were outraged when there was lack of data from youth sports got involved and they started getting, you know, organized. Same thing happened on the mask mandate. It's been very interesting, hasn't it, to see what's happened with some of the groups in the era of COVID, because you're hearing from people, I don't know if you are personally, but I'm seeing people get active that never, they were kind of sitting on the sidelines because they're angry right now.
That's right. And you have an increased number of people homeschooling, especially here in the county, because they don't like, and it's coming from all directions, you know, people who don't think that their schools have done enough to protect their kids from COVID, as well as people who don't like the mask mandates or people who don't like the fact that, you know, there were all the restrictions on kids' sports and Sam is still trying to, you know, restrict kids from playing sports and sitting with their families and cheering their families on when they just want to go out and play sports.
Will this take you running, just help me out with some of the process here. Will this take you out of being a state rep again or running for that or not?
Well, I am term limited out.
Okay, so, and I should have known that.
My last year anyway.
Okay, so this will be, this coming year, 2022, will be your last year in the legislature.
That's right.
Okay.
My swan song.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. You know, I think maybe some people might say you have to get started early here in this particular race. When you talk about North County in particular and what the appeal might be there, we have a representative in Congress right now, Cori Bush, who represents that area, that wants to defund police and defund the Pentagon. And I'm told by a lot of listeners, even many African-Americans, that say, look, we don't all believe that, right? And I'm guessing Shamet Dogan is sensing some of that as well when you go up to where you used to grow up.
Exactly. I think I operate in a space where I think the vast majority of people in our county are, which is to say that I'm pro-police, and I want our law enforcement to be able to have the tools and the funding they need to go after violent criminals and stop the increase in murders that we've had in the county over the past couple years. But at the same time, I'm in favor of police reform. And in fact, I spearheaded us passing the biggest police reform we've had in Missouri since Ferguson, because, you know, good police officers hate bad cops more than anybody else because they inhibit their ability to do their jobs. They need public trust to be able to do their jobs as police officers effectively. And it's pretty clear that they don't have that right now in all of our, you know, county and our city police departments necessarily. So that bill we passed will help our police and it will help our communities.
Do you think in a situation like this, and I don't know how crowded this field is going to be, but I can see a situation where there are going to be black Democrats that say Shamet Dogan isn't, you know, he's a Republican, he's not black enough. I can see some people saying Shamet Dogan's not conservative enough because he's more libertarian on some of these social issues. Do you have any concerns about that?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get haters no matter what you do in politics. That's the nature of the beast these days. But I think one thing that I can say that I don't think Sam Page really can say is wherever I stand, you're going to know where I stand. You might not agree with it, but you're going to know where I stand. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to, you know, be flip-flopping all over the place on these issues. And I know how to disagree with people without being disagreeable. I think that's kind of an old school approach to politics that in this, you know, Twitter and TikTok world, people think that we've moved past that. But from what I've been hearing from a lot of folks in the county, they want to get back to a world where our county exec isn't in the papers every day and isn't in national headlines.
Well, it's been a while since that's happened.
Shutting down everything.
Yeah, I know. Shamet Dogan, state rep, and he's running for St. Louis County executive. It's interesting, and I mentioned this earlier today, Lieutenant Colonel Troy Doyle, who I follow on Twitter, and he's a county officer, said chief's openings in both St. Louis County PD and SMLPD, because Chief Hayden announced today that he was retiring. So his tweet said, this is the perfect time to talk about addressing crime in our region. What would a consolidated police force look like? How do we provide adequate services to our community? Obviously, this whole effort from a couple of years ago, which I was very open-minded with, and some people weren't, with the county-city merger, just died a very quick death. But what are your thoughts moving forward on consolidation? Merger is a bad word, but there is an opportunity to talk about some of these things moving forward, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, because crime does not, you know, respect the boundaries of city and county or of any of these geographical boundaries that we have. So I think it makes sense for police departments across our area to cooperate. And we already have, you know, major crimes units where they do that kind of thing. But maybe in some of their other functions, they can look at whether or not it might make sense for them to cooperate or for us to have what we have up in North County, where you have the police collaborative, where several of the smaller cities decided to come together and pool their tax base together and just have one department patrolling several cities. I think that might be a model that might work for other parts of the county.
Well, I'm glad you're in the race because I think, you know, I hate to see this not be taken seriously by a Republican, assuming, and I think maybe Republicans learned this a little bit from the county prosecutor's race from a couple of years ago, because there simply wasn't a Republican candidate that was in the race. And when McCullough lost the primary, you're kind of left with Wesley Bell. So,
yeah, we cannot afford to not contest this race. And I'm going to make a really great run at it because I think I'm uniquely qualified to get crossover votes from disenfranchised Democrats as well as independents.
Shamed, I'm glad you're in the race. I'm a fan, as you know. ShamedDogan.com for county executive. Keep us posted. I'm sure we're going to have you back many times.
Awesome, Mark. Thank you so
All
much.
All right, take care. 540. I like having a good, confident, someone who... And look, I like his libertarian streak. I mean, he's right in line with me on some of these issues, and some people might not appreciate that. But he can connect with North St. Louis County in a very unique way. He's very competent. So I like him getting in this race. You know what? Quite candidly, I hope a lot of people don't get in the race, because maybe a couple of folks focus on the best candidate and try to get Sam Page out. Did your daddy let you drive? Like Dave Klein's theme song now that he's a farmer, right? That's why he picked this song from Thomas Rhett.
Oh, I'm for sure it is.
Well, he's always on his tractor these days, that Dave Klein. All right, we have a... I'm very excited because I love the game of golf and the game of professional golf. We have all kinds of big names in town right now for the Ascension Charity Classic at Norwood Hills Country Club.
Oh, this is so cool.
I think they have the Pro-Am today. Dan Reardon, no relation with us, our official golf correspondent. Dan, did you participate in the Pro-Am by any chance?
I did not participate in the Pro-Am, which is much to the benefit of hundreds of golfers in this area.
Yeah, I even if I was invited, I think my game is in the type of shape that I would have declined that invitation. But looks like we're going to get great weather for a great tournament this weekend here in St. Louis, Dan.
Yeah, you know, Mark, right off the bat, you have to give a lot of credit to the Tour champions. I'm assuming in part because this is the first year of the event. You know, I worked for the LPGA in St. Louis for 10 years and then 2 years in Chicago. And I knew that the measure that you put into every one of those tournaments was strength of field. And the strength of this field is really, really impressive. You know, Fred Couples is not here this week. Couples has bad feelings about St. Louis going back to 1992. Phil Mickelson is not here this week. Phil didn't play Champions Tour golf almost at all this summer, and now he's a vice captain getting ready for the Ryder Cup. Other than that, I'm looking at the range today, and I'm seeing Vijay Singh. I'm looking at the practice green. I'm seeing Colin Montgomery. I'm standing there asking questions of Bernhard Langer, and the list goes on and on and on of the quality of the players in this field. It is a Champions Tour event, so there's going to be many names of people spectators may not know, because they've had lesser careers. You know, a Jerry Kelly, a classic example, who I know you like because of his Wisconsin roots. But this is a really good field, and watching the players warm up on the practice range, knowing the weather, hearing what's being said about the golf course, this is going to be a really good event, and I hope that people will take advantage of the fact that it's here in St. Louis for the first time in the next 4 years.
Okay, now help me out with the format just a little bit, because as you know, Dan, I am easily confused, but most golf tournaments start on a Thursday and then wrap up on a Sunday, but this actually starts on Friday, right?
That's correct. The Champions Tour, right now it's called Tour Champions, but the Senior Tour has always been, except for majors, a 54-hole event with no cut in the field. So everybody that tees off on Friday will still be playing on Sunday. And they do that because, first of all, you want to keep that field small enough to be manageable. That's appealing to clubs. But also, and again, I'll go back to Kelly. Kelly told me that the reason he's playing so well now on the Champions Tour is he's not trying to make cuts. He's trying to win tournaments. And so they give them that security. Everybody that plays gets paid. You know, there are no losers in this circumstance. So it is a three-day, 54-hole event with no cuts.
So, you know, we know how much distance plays into PGA events, and there's been a lot of focus on distance. Is this one of those tournaments, because you're playing with the older guys, where it's not as important to drive the ball 300 yards or 376 yards? I mean, some of these guys can't do that, obviously, but this is more about technique, or what would you say about that?
I think that's based on the golf course more than the field. I was a little surprised that Bernhard Langer said that he thought at par 71 and a little over 7,000 yards that the course is playing long. He thought the Zoysia fairways were very cushioned and the ball didn't release as much. So he thought the course was a long golf course. I was ready to ask him, is this a course that you don't dominate by being good with the driver? But I veered away from that when he talked about length. I actually don't think Norwood is a course that you can bomb into submission. I think there's enough narrowness up to the golf course. There's enough length to the rough that I don't think that you're going to take the top five driving distance players in the field and necessarily make them the favorites this week. And if there is a consistent comment the players have made about this golf course is the speed of the greens, that the weather conditions have been so good late summer and we've had enough rain that they feel the greens are very, very dangerous to play. So, no, I don't think this is going to be a bomber's paradise. I think this is going to be guys who can play golf in all elements of the game.
So, Dan, do you know enough about the Legends Charity Challenge that's happening on Saturday to describe that? Because this is another fun aspect of this weekend.
Well, yeah, you have Jack Nicklaus, you have Ozzie Smith, you have Berube, and who
Tom
am
Watson.
I at?
Tom Watson.
And it's sort of odd, I think, but nice in a way, that they're going to play this while the tournament is still going on. So they're going to use a nine. They're going to play a nine that's been completed, but they're going to try and draw some of the people there. So, yeah, it's an exhibition, but it's going to run concurrently.
I love
with
that.
The tournament itself.
Yeah, so after cool. the pairing, the final pairing goes through hole 10, they're going to tee off and basically follow the final pairing. And that could be very interesting. I think that's going to be fun, especially for people that are on site.
And somebody told me that Craig Berube has been spending hour after hour after hour working on his game because he doesn't want to be embarrassed. But I think the one that I'm a little bit surprised because he doesn't do it that much is that Nicklaus is going to play nine holes. Jack has not played much golf because he considers himself ceremonial, and he never liked to play ceremonial. So if there is a player other than Berube that's going to feel a little pressure, it will be the 18 major winner, Jack Nicklaus, who's going to be playing in that field. But I like the idea. Like I said, you got a gallery out there, give them something more. And the fact that these guys decided to step up and make a contribution, all the more to it. Jack has an affiliation with this tournament, as well as the project over at Normandy. Tom Watson has been basically the godfather of the event down in Branson. So they have commitments to Champion Tour Golf, and they're honoring those commitments by showing up and giving the fans something special to watch.
Well, Dan, as you know, I was very fortunate 2.5 years ago to play golf with the Wizard at Bellerive, and I know how good his game is, and I know how seriously he takes the game of golf. So I think the Wizard's going to be prepared this weekend. But, you know, not that Ozzie's worried about embarrassing himself, but Ozzie wants to win. That's what I know about Ozzie.
I hope that that's true, Mark. I will tell you, no matter how good Ozzie was when he played with you, when there's a gallery out there,
it's
and
tougher.
All these guys, whether it's a John Smoltz or Brett Hull or whoever, that becomes a whole serious matter for them. And I, like I said, I wish no evil to Ozzie, but it's a whole different story when you're playing with two Hall of Famers and you have galleries, however big those galleries might be. And like I said, it's going to be interesting to see where the galleries go. Do they go with the leaders or do they go with the exhibition? I think they go with the exhibition.
Well, one thing I would think that there'd be a good opportunity for, just because when you go to a PGA event, you want to use what happened a couple of years ago at Belle Reve or any other PGA event, if you want to follow the leaders, there's going to be, especially if the leaders are names like Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, there's going to be huge crowds. But I've found even at PGA championships over the years, on a Sunday morning, you know, you get out there when the folks are teeing off that really aren't going to be contending for victory, but you can still see great names, get up close and personal, and see the game from a different perspective.
And I will even contest it, Mark, a step further than that. I know that when Hale Irwin, who has the all-time record for wins on the Champions Tour, when he turned onto the tour, his wife Sally told me that Hale hated the time that he was out there because the players were so unpleasant to be around. He said they complained about everything, and he thought, well, that's ironic since they've gotten the second chance at life. I can tell you that being out there today, and even more so today than when they were at Boone Valley, I find the older players way more accommodating. And so you mentioned in terms of the galleries being able to have access, in terms of getting being able to see them, I think you're going to find players are going to give access in terms of signing autographs as well.
Right. And you would hope so. You would hope that that would happen with this crew, and I think that'll happen. That's
absolutely
awesome.
Like I said, I've seen nothing but pluses. I had my doubts when they announced it, whether the town was going to turn out. And you know, we'll see in this pandemic era how many people actually show up and are willing to ride a school bus for 8 minutes to get to the golf course. But I think it's a great event. I think it's going to be staged as a great event. And I hope it turns out as a great event. And there's no way, no way to predict who will be the winner. On the Champions Tour, they don't know when they wake up in the morning what their body feels like.
Well, Dan, let's get it. I got to get to audio cut of the day, but let's do an update on Friday evening. Again, you can watch this, by the way. Golf Channel is going to carry 2:30 to 5 on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Dan, we'll talk on Friday. How does that sound?
Enjoy it, Mark.
All right, take care.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Left myself only enough time for a short cut of the day, but that's okay because this one was sort of on my radar. Sue, I don't know if you've heard this yet. It's a very confusing one from our president.
You know, the looks like a tornado, they don't call them that anymore, that hit the crops and wetlands in the middle of the country and in Iowa and Nevada. And I mean, it's just across the board.
Yeah, don't ask because I have no idea what he was trying. They don't call them tornadoes anymore. Huh. And apparently there were tornadoes in Nevada, if you just picked up on that. Have a great night. Back tomorrow. Chris Wallace on the show.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.